There it is. Hey, all right, it works. Yay. Good evening, ladies and gents. Welcome to the program. John Hell is my name, right here, deep in the heart of the Mission District on Radio Valencia. Big thanks to Black on Black on Black. I'll be back next week, Monday, 6 to 8 p.m., right here on Radio Valencia. Always a pleasure seeing them. Always a pleasure having them around. Very excited to have in the studio, coming up in about 10 minutes or so, former two-term member of the San Francisco Board of Supervisors for District 11. It's a very quiet district, but we're always still very strong people. John Apollos is going to be in the studio. We're going to talk about labor. We're going to talk about politics. I hope we talk about art. John has a lot to talk about. He's a good guy, and we're proud to have him back in the studio once again. It's been a few years, so we're going to get him here. In the meantime, thanks for tuning in, everybody. Going to go until 10 o'clock tonight, and we'll do things like this. Stick around.
You know, I know George played a tape of a scientist that was checking out tectonic plates up in Siberia, and it was called The Sounds of Hell, I believe. I'd love for you to play that again because, you know, I've heard about it. I've never heard it, okay? My pastor told me about it, but you know what? I'll tell you right now. What's in the earth? And the sounds of hell, you hear the people in torment.
Well, you listen in. You listen in on the radio here because you're going to hear it right now.
Tears away from your eyes. Stop the rain.
When the rain begins to fall, I must leave so long. Though I go, I want you to know. Though I leave you, I'll not deceive you. Wipe the tears away.
Ah!
Outstanding. Right here on Radio Valencia, some Prince Lasha Quintet. Congo Call, the name of the track that we heard right there. Started off the show tonight with Eddie Gale, Ghetto Music with The Rain. I love that album so much. I'm a freaking huge fan of this album, and it was reissued last year, originally out on Blue Note, and now Elemental Music did a great reissue of Eddie Gale's Ghetto Music. Get that record. As a matter of fact, I had a bootleg copy of it for the longest time on CD, and so I was so excited when they reissued it. John Hell is my name, Hell's Kitchen Radio, Monday nights right here on Radio Valencia. So you know me for playing lots of loud music and interviewing lots of great people. And tonight, back for his third time, I guess since 2011, I've got two-term former member of the San Francisco Board of Supervisors and a mayoral candidate, John Avalos, in the studio. Welcome, John.
Great to be here.
Yeah,
it's,
man.
It's been a long time. It's great to see you as well.
Yeah, good to see you, man. Time happens.
Time does happen. You look just as young as you always look.
You're too kind. My mom says I have a really good face for radio, so it's been working out. It's been working out really nice. So I wanted you to come on tonight. I invited you because I thought, you know, this is a really interesting time in history. You had your finger deep on the pulse of things that were happening in San Francisco politically for 8 years. You ran for mayor of San Francisco. You did incredibly well, you know, with your candidacy. Didn't make it over the top, unfortunately. But even post-election or post-elected position, very heavily involved in unions, labor here in San Francisco. Yeah. And so I want to have you on because I want to talk with you about, like, in your experience and your thoughts, where do you feel, what is the state of San Francisco today as the bubble that we've been for years, but also now with the kind of the magnifying glass of the federales kind of looking in on us? What's John Avalos have to say about San Francisco these days?
Wow. I mean, it's a huge topic.
And, it is.
I don't even know where to begin. I've been out of... I left my nonprofit job. I was an executive director for the Council of Community Housing Organizations. I left them on April 30th, and now I'm kind of going out into the world to see if I can make my fortune at freelancing or doing, you know, things I want to do. I'm doing a lot of photography, and I'm trying to, you know, frame. I do a lot of outlines of things I want to write about, but I'm not quite getting there in terms of like sinking my teeth into writing. But I want to do like a lot of work to support organizations around media advocacy. That's something I got trained in before, support labor organizations. So I'm kind of out of the picture of like immediately what's happening in San Francisco politics, although I've been immersed in it. Yeah. I've been kind of detaching myself. So everything's kind of scattered in my head right now about what San Francisco is all about. If you asked me a month and a half ago, I would be burning with incredible anger and frustration about how San Francisco is really lining up itself to be like a Vichy state,
right?
To just collaborate with the fascist administration of the Trump administration,
right?
And if you look in San Francisco, if you look in, you know, how the city hall has been operating, it's basically ceded a lot of authority to Mayor Lurie.
Yes.
Mayor Lurie, who actually self-funded his own campaign to become mayor and represents a very narrow group of interests that are really the ruling elite and even like the billionaire class, most of all. And that's who basically is running, you know, our country and getting big tax breaks in our country. If you have, like, you look at what happened in Bell the other day,
right?
You know about Bell in Los Angeles County, the city of Bell, like, you had probably a majority city council and mayor that reflect 80% of the population, which is probably Latinx and people of color, standing up for the community. Like, the police were there when ICE agents came in and rolled up in military formation. There was one like armored like Suburban with a turret that came out of it, and they tried to, you know, arrest people at a car wash, and they probably succeeded in some of it, but the community came and surrounded them, and the Bell cops came. that was possible to actually have the local law enforcement, the firefighters and the cops and Bell to actually protect the public residents rather than side with ICE.
Yeah.
In San Francisco, because we have administration that's, you know, aligned economically with the elite of this country who are now in the federal government are fascists, there's like no talk about, you know, what the Trump administration is doing to San Francisco. Yeah. And there's so much emphasis on, in San Francisco on, you know, law enforcement, on tackling the fentanyl crisis that is on our streets and in our homes with policing and abstinence and incarceration. There's a surveillance, you know, state that's being set up. It's been funded by Larson, this guy Larson, who has donated money to the San Francisco Police Department to actually create up a whole surveillance system with drones and cameras, and that's like being touted as San Francisco is now finding itself. Yeah. And you look at that, if we, you know, if it was the time of Obama, it would be kind of freakish to think about, although Obama's administration was really, you know, there was a lot of deportations that were happening under Obama. But under the Trump administration, it looks like we're just lining up to be like a localized version of, you know, what the federal government is doing. Yeah. This budget has cut like hundreds of millions of dollars from nonprofit services, nonprofit organizations that serve community groups around childcare and senior services and housing are getting tremendously cut. And all the money's going to law enforcement. Something's really wrong in San Francisco, and our elected leaders are sleepwalking or deliberately pacing themselves right to this.
And it almost feels today that, I mean, everybody knows with Trump, well, the gloves are off. He's incredibly transparent about his desire to just make things a police state, that it does make you wonder, is Lori just going to lay down for this? And it does lead me to what I want, and something I wanted to ask you. If you were to give Lori three priorities, you could go more, but at least three priorities that he should be focusing on right now to improve San Francisco. Where would you start?
Well, I think he should be leading the billionaire class and understanding that if you really want to create a country that is democratic, that serves people, that they have to be committing much more, and they should be where the tax breaks for the billionaires are being made at the federal level. We should be recovering those funds so we can take care of people here at the local level. Yeah. And that means that we should be investing in the people who are most targeted by the Trump administration: housing, education, transportation, climate, safe communities. That actually have the basis of safety, which is, you know, rich services, good education, all these things should be the investments and what he should be leading with so that he can actually make a real difference. Right now, he ran on, we're going to make the city safer, and now he's sticking to those in the most narrow way, to those commitments that he made to the public. And people voted for him because he didn't have any kind of experience in City Hall, so he was a fresh face. But what he's putting forward is actually a fear-mongering that is not going to make us safer. So I would focus on, recovering lost revenue that is we're not going to get from the federal government. So we build it here. So we build local autonomy to build housing that actually is the foundation of our economy, where the working class, who are the backbone of our local economy, can actually live here close to where their jobs are, that we invest in the education system, that we can ensure that we're building, you know, the pipeline of people who will be the ones who are to run this city and run this country in the future with wisdom and understanding to protect tenants and to protect people who are you know, facing deportations. I'd like to see our cops actually, you know, we don't need to actually increase our police force, but actually train them to actually care about our community and build more of an effort to have a community, you know, approach to how we address, you know, safety issues. So we're not just investing in cops to actually align themselves with ICE, who are going to be, you know, terrorizing our communities.
Yeah. If you're just tuning in, John Hell here, Hell's Kitchen Radio, Monday nights on Radio Valencia. I'm in the studio, John Avalos. He was a two-term member of the San Francisco Board of Supervisors, candidate for mayor, and he's been involved in union activity for many decades as well. Just talking about what's going on in San Francisco today, and I'm curious about, you know, you were a very active member of the Board of Supervisors. What, you know, how can the Board of Supervisors today hold Mayor Lurie accountable for what's going on? Because it does seem like, you're right, he's kind of acting as if, you know, almost like this mandate approach, which, you know, no, he didn't get a mandate, but he's, you know, still claiming the people want me, I'm going to clean up this town and make it nice and safe. And so how can the board stand up to him and hold him accountable?
Well, they've already demonstrated that they're not willing to do that. They've already demonstrated that they're willing to, like, give up their authority on how money's spent, how contracts are made. It's almost like either they're totally aligned with that approach that Mayor Lurie used on his campaign to win, that he was going to put money in public safety and behavioral health, but only around abstinence, and not evidence-based approaches. And what I think should have happened a long time ago, they should never have given him, like, just this blank check to, like, to get funding from wealthy people to dictate what types of services should be provided to people who are struggling with addiction on fentanyl. On the budget, which is that everything, which actually is the basis for deciding how the city is run, the Board of Supervisors did not do anything to bring any transparency to the budget up until the last month, when the budget was being worked on from January to June. It was only the month of May that they really engaged in that. I've served on the budget committee. I've actually chaired the budget committee. I chaired the budget committee during the worst years of the Great Recession, when our deficit was $500 million, when our deficit was, when our budget overall was $6 billion. So it's actually a greater deficit that we had proportionally to what, you know, we have today. And it was a real tough assignment, but we made sure that we were transparent. We were making sure that the mayor's office had no choice but to telegraph the decisions that they wanted to make, and that we were pushing back the whole way.
Yeah.
It's a struggle. It's a dynamic effort that you have to, you know, apply to bring transparency and to actually negotiate something different out of the budget. That wasn't done with Lurie. It was almost like they just ceded, like, okay, you won this thing, and now you're in charge. This deficit's so big, we can't solve it ourselves. You're the one in charge. You're the one who's taking responsibility, so you get to do it, and it's all on your head.
My.
And but the thing is that at some point, they get blamed for it as well. And I don't think it was a really solid strategy to see that.
Yeah, next cycle of elections for the members of the board will be an interesting one. And then that actually really begs the question about the role of the constituents. You know, are the, and from what you've been witnessing, and even in your own experience, you know, how important are those phone calls, those letters, those folks coming through the door?
They're absolutely important. And unfortunately, what's happened is that people are so disaffected that you only get a certain group of people who are actually doing those letters and doing those calls. And you have a lot, you don't have this kind of strength of community organizations like you had previously, where you could unite on quality of life issues that were economic quality of life issues in neighborhoods. Those voices are not as strong as they were before, when you were seeking to get, you know, your streets repaired in I would say that you're trying to get programming for your childcare or senior programming or youth programming in your neighborhood, or you're trying to get your parks that are just been devastated for decades, getting those fixed. Like, those voices are not quite as strong as they were. I'm not at City Hall, yeah. So I don't really see what comes through. But I know that when I left City Hall in 2016, we had 3 staff. And then when the members of the Board of Supervisors, they got a 4th staff member in their offices, and then suddenly it's on them to respond to a mountain of constituent concerns. And you see so much in the media, it's drumming up about encampments and homelessness and the fentanyl crisis and crime on the streets and how, and so people are kind of driven to like respond to what the media puts out as the most important things. Yeah. And we don't see the effort around economic justice that is actually should be the backbone of what we're trying to fight for.
Let's go ahead and take a music break real quick. As you know, which is, does not include the sound of that muffler, which is totally fine. Right here on Radio Valencia with me, John Hill, and I got John Avalos, former member of the Board of Supervisors, in the studio. Here's some Death Valley Girls, Radio Valencia. Music there from L.A. Witch off of their latest record, Dog God. We heard S.O.S. Just before that, a new single from the Death Valley Girls, also out of Los Angeles, Sisters of the Moon. John Hell is my name, Hell's Kitchen Radio Monday nights. I've got John Avalos in the studio with me. He's a current member of the DCCC. Is that correct, John?
That is, unfortunately, where I spend the last Wednesday of every month.
What does the Democratic Central Committee do? What do you guys do these days?
Well, what we don't do these days is virtue signal the way we virtual signaled 2 years ago,
okay.
But we virtual signal in other ways,
okay.
That meet the current demand that's placed on elected officials to align with the ruling class.
Is there a bingo card you guys use?
it feels that way. Okay. The resolutions are about as simple and obvious as the bingo cards that we might play with. No, it's weird because I'm in the minority there, and I was in the minority for about 3 years on the Board of Supervisors, and I knew kind of what it was like to be in the minority. This Democratic County Central Committee goes all the way up to the national level, so we have Nancy Pelosi,
yeah,
serves there. She's never there. She has a proxy.
Okay,
Scott Wiener's there. Lieutenant Governor's there.
Right.
Malia Cohen, who's their controller, is there.
Okay. Former board member.
Fiona Ma has a person on there.
Former board member.
Kevin Mullen.
Matt Haney.
Matt Haney has a person there.
Okay.
So you have, like, the establishment is clearly represented there. And then you have a bunch of people who got elected last year backed by the billionaire class, the ruling class, by Gary Tan, by the tech bros, by the real estate capitalists, and they're there to drive their agenda. So they're part of the Democratic Party that we see across the country that attacks progressives.
Oh yeah, moving to the right.
Yeah. So, and so I'm like the persona non grata there. I'm like the evil John Avalos. On there, they know it's difficult to actually hate me because I'm actually not hated in the city, and unlike other politicians, I mean I might be disliked, but I'm not hated.
Yeah, right. How's Chris anyway?
I haven't seen Chris. Yeah, so I actually feel like what they do is they spend their time shutting down debate.
Yeah,
and whenever I have something to like offer and debate, they'll move right to a vote on a measure, so we don't get a chance to even raise our voices there. So they're really about consolidating power. They don't want to have any dissent in there. No. And I think in 2023, I came forward with the old, you know, Democratic County Central Committee that was more progressive, with a resolution to call for a ceasefire in Gaza. You know, to call on the Israelis to stop fucking killing people. And can I say that?
Yeah, you're allowed to say fucking on Radio Valencia.
Okay, good.
It's perfectly acceptable.
And I'm gonna,
and Gaza.
And I couldn't get it to pass even with the progressives one.
Awesome.
Now there's just no way you could even, you know, say such things. So on Wednesday I have a meeting, and there's a resolution that's on the meeting, and it's basically calling us to condemn the defacing and the vandalism that happened at Manny's last week.
Oh, right, yes.
Which I'm fine to do.
Yeah, yeah.
But they talk about rising anti-Semitism, which I agree is happening, at the same time as rising Islamophobia.
Yes.
I can't think of any greater evidence of rising, you know, Islamophobia than the bombing of Tehran and Iran and the genocide in Gaza and the ethnic cleansing that's stepping up right now in the West Bank, and generally how the whole Middle East is treated. And so this resolution that we have before us is basically saying rising anti-Semitism as measured by the Anti-Defamation League, which is basically an arm of, you know, the establishment that is supporting the State of Israel
to
do these things.
It's very pro-Zionist organization.
And the ADL is actually has come out with a statement in support of the bombing of Iran. And it's like, so I have no credibility. So I have to vote on something because the ADL says
wow.
I need to vote on that. I actually won't be voting on it.
Wow.
I'll be abstaining, which I get to do as a member of the Democratic County Central Committee. I'm going to vote no because I'm going to make a strong statement already. I've already prepared my statement. I'm going to condemn the, you know, attacks on the physical and the property tax attacks on you know, on the Jewish community members and Manny Yekutiel, and there were people who were assaulted in the Marina a week and a half ago. Like, that disgusts me.
Of course.
Right? So I can make a strong statement about that, but I can't support a resolution that the ADL is confined me to, like, only see it from their point of view.
Sure. And, so it's making me wonder about you know, it's already been apparent for quite a few of us how far right the Democratic Party has moved over the last number of decades.
Thanks to Bill and Hillary Clinton.
Well, I was literally just going to say, you know, you think the Republicans are tough on crime, watch me. You know, and it just sort of continues, you know, down that line. But one would have thought, knowing the history of San Francisco for like the last 50 years, not in our town, but it seems like there is that march towards the right, even for the Democrats in the city.
You know, it's been pretty tough to see, because I've been part of this kind of youth and justice movement that has been trying to break the school to prison pipeline. Mm-hmm. And in San Francisco, with the help of like national thinkers and really good people on the ground, we've been able to put a lot of things in place that have actually decreased incarceration.
Yes.
Especially for young people.
Yes.
But also for adults.
Right.
We actually, you know, London Breed voted and led the charge on not rebuilding 850 Bryant, our you know, downtown jail. But once, and I think the election of Chesa Boudin was like the apex of that moment,
yes.
Right? Decades of work to get to elect someone who is now going to implement the policies that yeah. you know, people of conscience have been, you know, fighting for,
yeah.
to now have it in the adult system. And then there was just a total backlash.
Yes. Yes.
And that was, I think that's been the start of it. So it led to the recalls and, yes. of course, the education system. Then COVID didn't help, right?
Yeah,
like
yeah.
COVID was a big part of like how difficult it's been. And we've now lost our identity as a city that really cares for people. We're no longer the city of St. Francis. Mm. We're like Rome under Mussolini now, it yeah. feels like, you yeah. know, yeah. In comparison. And I think that's, you know, what we're trying to find is, I think the Lurie administration and the billionaire class and the real estate capitalists and the tech bros, they want to define this whole, like, privatized world that doesn't that where compassion is not a virtue that they even have the time for, to misquote talking heads, and now we're dealing with you know, people who have no place to lodge their concerns right. about growing inequality in the city that's been happening for the past 15 years
yeah.
in a dramatic way, that you have no place for your voice to land anymore.
Right. Ooh, ouch. That's woke ideology. How dare you? How dare you even bring that up? And it's making me think about, you know, the policies. Well, I find it interesting and refreshing that the courts, you know, we have in the Tenderloin, Judge Michael Begert, you know, running the drug court, the veterans court, and the TL, that I think has been a remarkable court. For those of you who are not familiar with this, it was, you know, created through the court system of San Francisco. That any crime that took place in the Tenderloin neighborhood would be dealt with in this particular community court, and a lot of drug issues dealt with in this court. Obviously, crime and veterans, any veteran-related crimes, the person alleged to commit the crime as a veteran is involved. It's going to be heard in this court. And I've sat and been in that room watching the work that they've done. It's not only Judge Begert, but it's also all these community people from all these social services programs all coming together, working together. How are we going to help those who have been harmed and those who've committed the harm, to keep them out of prison, to get them into systems that are going to benefit them and benefit the community? Their success has been remarkable, and yet you never hear about it. It's like, can't hear about that. As FBI crime statistics continue to show, the violent crimes are on the decrease, that there's been success battling fentanyl. But that doesn't make good news. That doesn't make good policy when you're the executive at the top, whether it's the local, the state, or the federal level, and you're trying to pass policies that are going to do what? What is the long game for what's happening in D.C.? What do you think they're do they have a long game for these policies of trying to just lock everybody up and kick them all out? Do you see any long game for the Trump administration or anybody?
I don't think they have much of a long game. Their short game is just total control. Is cruelty and total power and seizing it and running it and allowing people like Donald Trump to get off on his ratings any moment of the day.
Yeah, typical Mussolini fascist fare. Yeah, very strongman-esque.
What's incredible though is despite all this great work that Begert is doing, there's these elements within San Francisco and south of Market where you have concentrations of a lot of use of fentanyl and other narcotics, that there's this attack on the judiciary that's being made by community organizations, by small businesses. This guy named Henry Kanilowitz, he put out this... there was a march against fentanyl that happened about a month and a half ago, and he put out this statement to get people to come out. He says, "We're going after the judiciary."
Wow.
This is going after the judiciary when they're the only hope for our country right now.
Yeah, sure.
It's like, where are we going? And we had community organizations that do good work in the community that were aligned with this because they, by aligning with the establishment, they get sustainability.
Yeah.
And it's a really tough place to see. Our Democratic County Central Committee was moved to a block from where that march was going to happen. The day before the march occurred, we met, and we had this huge knockdown, drag-out fight because our majority of the Democratic Party refused to let labor organizations to actually have their measure that they were there for to get voted on heard earlier in the meeting, and it wasn't heard until like 11:30 at night. And so it was like the most the meeting ended up in just this drag out fight between Nancy Tung, who's works for the DA's office for Brooke Jenkins, who was who was really leading that march against fentanyl because she wants to go after.
Of course, absolutely,
she wants to go after the judges, and she was part of the whole effort to actually.
They're standing in the way.
They tried to remove Begert and the other guy who ran with these judges that were supported by the billionaire class.
Right.
On the other side was Connie Chan, who was, representing her work on the board and how she's trying to ensure that there's good decision making. And they want to, on the one side, it's like, we want you to be more political about this and supporting like the ruling class and the attacking, the fentanyl crisis with abstinence only efforts and incarceration for the people in the streets. And Connie's like, no, we actually have to have a real effort that is, addressing the needs that people have so they don't end up on our streets, right? And it's just nastiness that has engulfed our discourse. And I think I see on the board, as I mentioned earlier, that the people are kind of laying down to it. They're not taking the opportunity to fight back. And that's allowing this, seeding ground, allowing this you know, a totalitarianism to come to San Francisco.
Fascinating, and what a time. Just tuning in, I have John Avalos in the studio with me this evening, former member of the Board of Supervisors, current member of the Democratic, what is it, Democratic?
Democratic County Central
County,
Committee.
That's it, Democratic County Central
I'm there for
Committee.
My sins.
Yeah. talking about the sort of the state of the city and what's been happening. He's got a few more minutes with us. I'm going to take a little bit of a breather, play some music for you, come back, and I have some final words. How about some goat? Let's hear some goat. Talk to God, Radio Valencia.
Thank you.
Good stuff there from Goat right here on Radio Valencia from their Fuzzed Out in Europe. Great live version there of Talk to God right here on Radio Valencia with me, John Hell, Monday nights, 8 to 10 p.m. Pacific. And I've got in the studio with me, John Avalos. We've been talking about the way of the world politically in San Francisco and kind of moving out statewide and nationally. And I'm so happy you came in tonight, John. Thank you for being with us.
It's been great to be here.
So if you're listening in tonight, you got people, we have people listening and they're like, okay, this sucks. What do we do? What are like two or three things you recommend the constituents and the residents of our fine city can do?
Well, I actually think it's all on us to fight fascism, and it's all on us to be able to create our sense of community. And there's so much pressure on us to be individuals and maybe be a family unit. It's the greatest expansion of individualism. We have to move beyond that. So how do we get to know our neighbors better? How do we communicate with people? How do we grow, mutual aid networks in our communities that we look after each other and we build a sense of belonging that people can feel comfortable in our neighborhoods when the rest of the world is trying to, extract people who don't, quote unquote, belong?